Hello, everyone. This is Milton Cornwell, COO of Copper Peak Logistics. And today I am conducting another episode of our expert series, where we get to compare notes with thought leaders, both inside and outside of the wine industry, on topics of interest to all of us. Today, I'm here with my dear friend, Shep Hyken, who is arguably one of the foremost experts on delivering amazing customer service, managing the customer experience, and creating brand loyalty. As a keynote speaker, his client engagements take him all over the country and internationally, for that matter, for companies like AT&T, Disney, Lexus, SAP, American Express, coincidentally, our local favorite, In-N-Out Burgers. He is a New York Times and Wall Street Journal best-selling author and inducted into the National Speakers Hall of Fame. So with this backdrop, Shep, please tell us how you first got started in your profession.
Sure. So I have been in this business since 1983. That's a long time. Prior to that, I had a number of jobs in the retail world, and I also was a birthday party magician. And by the way, that's real important, because when I did my first party at age 12 and I came home and my mom said, "What are you going to do after dinner?" I thought the right answer was homework. But the right answer was actually write a thank you note to the people that just paid you for that first birthday party. They gave me $16 for 45 minutes. And that's back in the 1970s. And that means, like, today's dollars, that's like $2,497. But it was a lot of money for a little kid. And my dad said, "Great idea. Next week, call the parents, thank them again, and then ask them, how did you like the show? What did you like about the show? What were your favorite tricks?" And if you do that enough times, you'll start to hear people talking about the same tricks. Get rid of the tricks they don't talk about and replace them with tricks they will. And I didn't know that was customer service and experience. Show appreciation, get feedback, act on the feedback, and make improvements. I'm 12 years old learning about this, having no idea that this is what most companies, even the most sophisticated, mature companies, are still doing and do today. I had, like I said, regular jobs. I love taking care of people. Graduated college, looked for a job, saw a couple of motivational speakers, and I thought, wow, with that entertainment background, by the way, I graduated from birthday parties to working in nightclubs and doing comedy and magic. I said, I've got an entertainment background. I went to school. I had jobs. I'm going to write a speech on customer service. And that's how it all started. And today, I'm so fortunate. I've worked with hundreds and hundreds of companies, some of the largest brands in the world, some of and even some people in the wine industry. And I've been so lucky to be able to work with them and help them build a stronger relationship with their customers. Ironically, most of the customers that hire me, somewhere around 82%+, do not hire me to get better. They want to stay at the top of the game, or maybe they want to nuance it better. But it's really interesting that the companies that are playing at the top of their game are the ones that want more training and speakers and things. So,
well, that's pretty impressive to go from being a magician at
birthday parties. To,
you know, you've got a lot of Fortune 500 clients that you talk in front of, don't you, Chef?
Yeah, I'm very, very lucky.
You're also published books, do you not?
Well, I don't publish them. Publishers publish them, but I write books. So 7 books total. Coming out with another book in a month or so called Cult of the Customer, which is actually a re-release and an updated book from about 12 years ago with new stats, facts, updated stories. Some of the stories are timeless. Got rid of some of the companies that are no longer relevant. Even got rid of a couple of people. I spend a lot of time writing. Every week I write articles. I write for Forbes. I write my own articles for newsletters and different publications that are out there.
One of the books that I've been reading up on and everything was The Convenience Revolution, because it has a lot of different things that apply to wineries. And maybe let's use that as a framework for our discussion today. Can you walk us through the 6 disciplines and
sure,
maybe what that book's about? And let's take them maybe in bite-sized chunks, like the first 2 in that book, I believe, are reducing friction and self-service. Can you start off there, Shep?
Yeah, well, actually, what I'd like to do is go a little bit further back and talk about the concept of convenience in general. And then, you know, because I think it's important to understand, what does convenience really mean? And convenience started many, many years ago. Justinian the Great and the Byzantine Empire, when there were just chariots, a long way between town to town. Convenience stores, that was the first one of all time, was built by the Justinian the great empire, as he recognized there needs to be a place for citizens to buy life's necessities. And so they created this convenience store at many major intersections, which that was really the first convenience store. Then you think about convenience stores today, starting in the early, like 1920-something, Southland Ice Company turned into Southland Corporation, which is now 7-Eleven, with about 65,000 convenience stores around the world today. People will pay more for a more convenient experience. They drive by, they go in, there's less selection, prices are a little bit higher, but they love the convenience of a convenience store. So just to give you an idea, that's what it's about. And if you think about today's modern times, customers are no longer comparing us to the best service and experience they have to a competitor. They compare whatever the company is, even in the wine business, to the best service they've received from anyone. So Milton, I'm going to ask you, what would be the easiest company in the world that you probably do business with today on a regular basis?
Amazon.
Easy. Ding, ding, ding. That is the correct answer. So Amazon, they cover all six convenience principles. Now, they used to be the lowest price. They no longer are. As a matter of fact, they're so comfortable with the experience that they give you, which is not only a comfortable, confident experience, but a convenient one, that they'll tell you right on their website, you can buy this item at a lower price and give you a link to the actual provider. But guess what happens? People are enamored with the experience they have from Amazon. So just last year, I wrote the book, and I actually hired a company that does research to give me some support. And they gave me a lot of psychological support of why people enjoy and will pay more for convenience. Well, last year, we did a survey of over 1,000 consumers, and the statistic of validity is very, very high when you get to that many. And we asked some basic questions. Would you be willing to pay more for customer service, for good customer service? And the answer was resounding yes, by almost 60%, 12 or 13% said, no, we wouldn't. And if you look at the age breakdown, you wouldn't be surprised that it's many young people who are looking for the best deal and service is not as important as getting a good value in the price area. But overall, more than half. But then we asked another question, would you be willing to pay more for convenience? And more than 90% of the people said yes. So convenience is trumping even the basic customer service. So when I wrote my book, I thought customer service is really what people come back for. But if you can add convenience to it, you've got an unbeatable combination. So there's a little background on the whole convenience concept. The six principles are reducing friction, self-service, using technology, a subscription model, delivery, and access, meaning like, are you open 24 hours a day? Are you logistically convenient, accessible, if you will? In your business, the wine industry, boy, it's gone from, you know, straight retail to delivery and subscription models for members of wine clubs. People in your industry are actually practicing many of these convenience principles. The question I have is, are they completely aware of how powerful these principles are and how they can exploit each one?
This is the challenge for us, is that many of them are providing, you know, customer experiences through their tasting room and trying to get them. And everyone is trying to change their tasting room model now to get them to stay for 2 to 3 hours. No more of this, go visit six wineries in a day. It's how do we get them to come and stay at hours? You know, and it dovetails into that whole thing of the customer experience and trying to build literally almost entertainment value around this.
That's what's happened. And that's exactly what has to happen. By the way, a friend of mine, Jeff Slutsky, used to have a great line. He said, what usually happens is the one that gets the order is usually the last place that the customer is. Now, that may not be quite the case as a winery, as you're going around different wineries and you go, oh, I like this one. Let's order a couple of cases. Let's subscribe to their, you know, wine by the case a month type of subscription model you have. And by the way, subscription model, convenient, like clockwork, shows up on my doorstep. Customers love that consistency. By the way, so do companies, because it's recurring revenue, ongoing, and it doesn't stop until the customer says no. And if you do your job, the customer should never say no. It should be value all the way. Back to the idea. My friend Jeff said, if you want the customer to not go to another store, say, hey, I've got a special gift for you. Give them a gallon of ice cream on the way out. They got to go home and put it in the freezer. They're done for the day.
So the convenience revolution, you know, reducing friction. Talk to me a little bit about that. What does that mean?
So reducing friction is exactly what it sounds like. And there is an element of reducing friction in all six of the principles. But think about what Amazon's done. And by the way, again, some of these ideas cross over to other areas, but they're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Any winery that has a website is potentially open 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So same kind of thing. What else do they do? They make it so easy. Open up your computer. You go to Amazon.com. You look for something in the search bar. You find it. If you're set up, you don't have to put in your address. But it gets better than that because Amazon said, wow, we've got to create an even better experience. They created something called the Dash button. And the Dash button is like a doorbell looking button that's tied to a product that you buy. So let's say that one of our wineries has a specific wine and they send you a little like doorbell and you connect it to your Wi-Fi in your home. And every time you say, oh my gosh, I'm down to three bottles. I need to order more. You just push the doorbell and it automatically places an order for you. Now that's pretty convenient, isn't it? So Amazon did this and they tied it to all the consumables, things you ate, things you drank, things you eat, dishwashing detergent, everything. But guess what they said? Not convenient enough. What could be more convenient than just pushing a button? Why should you have to push a button when we sell you an Amazon Echo? Just say, I want to buy more wine, and it places your order for you.
And, you know, that brings to mind a couple things that we're dealing with in the wine industry is that convenience is also driven by customer preferences. And so data and understanding customers and what their buying habits are is critically important. And just the use of advanced technology, that a winery doesn't think of itself as being open 24 hours, whereas it certainly is open 24 hours in any common world that we live in. And then that brings to mind then the entire delivery experience of once they purchase, you know, how long does it take? And that's also something that is a little bit more problematic in the wine industry because we're dealing with alcohol and we're dealing with basically an adult signature. There are certain things that we can talk about as we get into the delivery aspect of things that we want to bring to everyone's attention as well. Let's talk about the next one then, self-service.
In a sense, once the customer understands who you are and what you are, you want to teach them to use the self-service option. In other words, teach them where they can go onto a website and order exactly what they want, where their account is. Depending upon how easy you want to make it, it could be a straight up shopping cart experience, just like going to Amazon or any other online retailer. Or if they're going to join a club, maybe you can onboard them with some personalization and have an employee who might be at the concierge of your organization walk the new member through the process of, hey, let's go on the website together. We'll share a screen on the computer. Let me show you what to do when you want to order more, when you want to try a sample, and you know, whatever. There's lots of ways you can incorporate that self-service option. People like the self-service. Think about if I have a choice of calling my dentist and I call the dentist, they put me on hold, I get the person, I'd like to make an appointment, they pull my record up, they talk to me about when my last appointment was, and it takes like 7-8 minutes. Not a big deal, but what if I just go online because I was sent a notice, it's time to make your appointment. I just go online, I look at an opening, put my name in there, and it's done in 60 seconds or less. We can take that mentality and start to drive a better self-service experience for our customers.
That's what many of the wine club managers are doing, is basically taking new customers and walking them through the process and doing the reach out to make sure that they are talking to their very best customers and or trying to get individuals that are maybe a one-time, two-time, you know, purchaser and trying to move them up. Not only just a wine club member, but obviously, as we talked about, the e-commerce online sales, trying to get those additional sales in between. And that probably dovetails directly into the next one, which is technology.
Yeah.
How we use technology, right?
Yeah. So technology drives a lot of that self-service experience that we're talking about. Technology drives accessibility, being open 24/7 as a web, making it easy to order. And if you can incorporate some level of technology that makes it easy, by the way, an app is technology. If a customer loves your wine, they will download your app, especially if you provide value in that technology. For example, you can get the Shep Hyken app. Every week when I post a video or I write an article, it automatically brings it in so that anybody that wants to follow me, they have my app in their pocket. Anybody that wants to check out what the latest and greatest wines are, or maybe an article that would give some value, if I know on a regular basis you're going to provide me value, I'm going to keep that technology nearby.
Well, I know we have a lot of players in the wine space that have apps that are typically there for being able to share experiences with brands, but to my knowledge, I don't know of any one single winery that has its own app. So that might be the golden nugget in our conversation right here today.
Yeah, very inexpensive to do, by the way. I use a company called Paper.ly, Paper.li. And what I've done is I've gone out and I chose a bunch of what I call influencers or people that I want to follow. And then once I make my list of followers, I want to know when they're talking about customer service, customer experience. Those are the topics that resonate with me. And what it does is it assembles basically a daily journal of these articles from these influencers. So every day I get this. But here's what's cool. You can set it up so that others can subscribe to what I'm interested in. So I created a URL called customerservicedaily.com. And if you go to customerservicedaily.com, you'll see today's issue. These are the articles that are of interest to me. Now, that's my world, customer service and experience. In your world, put in the different publications. And when they mention keywords, it's going to auto-populate. So it becomes my little news publication. Bottom line is, imagine being able to send your people, and this is like a general, not just about me and my vineyard, but about the wine industry in general. If you like to know what I'm thinking about, what I'm reading, this is it. And you will get followers. You capture their information so you can add them to a separate mailing list for when you want to promote to them.
Shep, you're practicing what you speak.
Thank you.
The use of technology and talk about frictionless and access to information. I mean, that's exactly what it's all about, right?
Yep.
Talk to me a little bit about subscriptions, because we already touched on that.
Sure. Well, I mean, this is utopia in our business. People don't need to be on location to pick up a case of wine. We can set it up. You know, that's what our wine club memberships are. Every month, every quarter, every season, they get their shipment. And it's like clockwork. The recurring revenue that you get is great. And we want to train people, and this sounds terrible, but we want to train them to use the subscription model. It's very powerful. If you create enough value with it, people will not unsubscribe, and this will go on for potentially years and years and years.
So when we talk about that, though, a lot of what we deal with on the shipping end is, what does that customer see when they open up that box? And as we know, there are—
That's part of the experience, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Very, very important piece.
I just bought another iPad and the little pen, and just opening up the box is a cool experience. And we should make sure that we give them, the customer, the member, the quality experience that we want them to perceive, that's in line with the experience that they would have of coming to our vineyard or enjoying that nice, wonderful bottle of wine. We've got to make, everything's got to be congruent. So remember, it's just not, let's put them in a box with some styrofoam around. Let's make it look good, feel good. Hey, in my book, The Convenience Revolution, I talk about a club that I'm a member of. This is a great club. The Dollar Shave Club. Every month I get 4 razor blades fresh. Every week I change them out and I shave, and this is great. But you want to know what? It comes in just a little brown, stiff envelope. But you want to know what else is in there? It's a really cool little newsletter, and it's fun to read, and it's got lots of little tips about hygiene and shaving, but it's also got tips about, it's summer, hey, here's some barbecue tips. So imagine people don't just open their box. They have a nice box. It's a good experience just looking at it, aesthetically pleasing. But here's a publication that you guys, and that's just part of being a member of the club, and it all goes together.
Yeah, so we cannot underestimate the power of making sure that we use every single package to reinforce brand imagery for the winery. Mm-hmm. They come and join the club at the tasting room. how do we bring that tasting room experience and make it resonate through the boxes that they receive? Because we don't use styro because of the environmental aspects of it, but we use the lay down pulp, and they're just not aesthetically appealing when individuals open this box. So the collateral, the story, the you can add into it are just critically important.
So this is important. I could see you opening the box and there'd be a note. We love ugly boxes. Why? Styrofoam, which is what most people would use, is environmentally detrimental to the environment. So we've chosen instead to do this. Now people understand it. They accept it. But here's the cool part. There are certain people that say they think like I do. I love them even more now that I know that that's the kind of company they are. I've got a friend of mine and he's got a shoe company. All of his cardboard boxes are number one, recycled, and number two, they don't use glue. They're folded in such a way that there's no environmental hazard with these glues that can, you know, be harmful to the environment. So people will actually like the shoes more or like your wine more because you're on a cause.
We certainly try to do a lot of those things, Shep, in the wine industry, though, that we just have different things associated with breakage and with restrictions. And that just puts more pressure on the marketing collateral and on getting creative with things that you want to pair with the wine. Mm-hmm. See a lot of our wineries, you know, looking, you know, in those areas. But moving on, because it's very relevant to the topic that we're on right this second, is delivery. Tell me a little bit about delivery.
Isn't that what we're talking about? You know, it's not, if you can't go on site and actually go and try the wine and buy it right there, or if you're on vacation, you're obviously not going to take a bunch of cases of wine back with you on an airplane. Delivery really can set you apart. I'll give you a story, and this is the lead story in the book. You don't have to focus on all six of these principles to be successful. And I would imagine that most people listening to us talk today will say, you know what, I actually participate in four or five, if not all six of these. So there was a car retailer here in St. Louis where I live. I have been buying cars from them for over 20 years. And one day I'm driving around 10 miles from my home. By the way, this retailer that I've been buying cars from is walking distance to my office. If I need service and I can't get a loaner, no problem. I'll just walk to work and I'll have my car done on a day where I know I don't need it, a car the rest of the day. While I'm driving around, my wife says, look at that car. You've got to check that out. So we go in, we look at it. And the guy even says, test drive it. I go, no, I don't know. He convinced me to test drive it. And when I was done, I said, what's it going to take for you to get me in this car today? And he goes, that's my line. And I go, exactly. Well, here's the problem. As much as I'd love to buy the car from you, you're 10 miles from where I live. If I buy this car and I need to get it serviced, I got to drive in traffic in the morning and back. That's an hour and a half round trip, maybe an hour, 2 hours a day by the time I have to go back and pick it up. And he says, hold on, look around. There's no waiting room. We actually have one. It's very small. And some people use it. And it's very nice, by the way. Great cappuccino machine, big TV and a couch. But it's very small compared to other dealerships because when you buy a car from us, we deliver the car to you. Every time you need service, we drop you off a loaner. We pick yours up. The only time you come in here is to buy another car. And if you know the car you want, you just call me up and I'll bring it to you. You don't have to come in. Whoa, how much is that going to cost me? Nah, it's about the same price. Probably we're competitive. Let me write up a deal, go shop it with anybody else. And if you feel it's too high, let me know. We want to be a good value to you. That guy stole business away from a competitor who I'd been doing business with for 25 years with one idea. He delivered. So when we can deliver product conveniently to a customer, they will enjoy us more than the ones that won't.
And especially for wine. One of our challenges is we are chasing Amazon as we look at delivery. You know, everybody wants immediate gratification. In the wine industry, still, I would say that vast majority of everyone still ships everything from California location. Copper Peak and a few others do have multiple locations, allowing wineries to be able to store product in multiple locations that are closer to the customer. And wouldn't you agree that in this Amazon world, the quicker we can get a shipment into the hands of the customer, the better we are, because it just simply goes hand in glove with everything that we're talking about. It creates a better customer experience.
Yep. The Amazonation of the world, because they have set the bar for what delivery looks like. So the way to get around that, because it's often difficult and expensive to send a case of wine or multiple cases that weigh a lot, actually, Amazon has its own jets that they use, their own cars. We've got to operate through a system. And your distribution that you have in multiple locations is kind of the start where we're closer to our customers. But here's what we must do. We must educate the customer on what to expect. And you can create a good expectation. And once the customer knows, they'll accept that it's going to take 5 days and because you explain why. Number two, you're going to take them through every step of the way. So I just ordered a really cool thing from some company. I wanted to buy these books, and they're huge, thick books. You know, as soon as I bought it, they said, they give me a choice of how I want it delivered. And the moment I chose, I then was confirmed, you ordered, this is how it's going to be delivered. Here's your shipping number. Track it. But they did better than that. They told me where it was, that I didn't have to actually track it myself. I just received two emails today, one from the shipper and two from the company I bought the item from, to tell me my item's been delivered. Part of it is creating confidence in delivery. I know it's happening. I know where it is. I don't have to worry about it. Plus, you told me how long it's going to take. You should also make sure you tell me if there's a delay, because the last thing you want is for me to wonder where it is and then me be forced to call you. That's friction, because then I got to call you. I got to look up the number, and then I might be put on hold. Then you've got to look for the order. That's an old style way of doing things. The new way is to be proactive.
And we see that a lot with the various small parcel carriers that are offering solutions for the customer to be able to redirect their packages in the event that they may not be home. Mm-hmm. Because of the adult signature fee, they're allowing customers to be able to basically, you know, promote convenience for themselves as to where they want that package to be redirected or to be held, so that they can pick it up. We're definitely trying to figure out ways to combat the Amazon.
I know it's hard to say. Amazon Nation. The Amazon Nation of the world.
Of our world, yes.
Not the nation, but the world.
Yeah. And the last thing is access. And I think access, as you've kind of explained, is across, you know, we're creating ease of access across all of these different disciplines, are we not?
Yeah. I mean, access. As soon as you go online, you've created access. Ideally, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can go on and shop my winery. You can shop for the accessories. You can shop for the swag. I'm now an online retailer, and I'm competing just like any other online retailer. And what I would suggest you do, and I know I'm getting away from access, you might want to have a chat set up. And by the way, you can hire virtual people who don't necessarily work at your winery, but you educate them and train them, and at a very reasonable price, they can answer consumers' questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can create a chat bot that will actually answer the basic questions and be strong and good enough to know that you're asking me a question that I don't understand. I'm giving you the wrong answer. So we're going to have one of our people call you back between the hours of 8 and 5 Pacific time or whatever time. So you can create those kinds of messages that make it easy. That's what accessibility is. So we have to create the experience.
And in the wine industry, we really do not see the use of online chat very much, which, you know, could be something that, you know, we really need to experiment with. And AI is certainly coming into many, many discussions about how to apply that to our wine industry and where does it go. So these are all very relevant topics that we're covering. But in the time we have left, I want to ask just a couple other things, because I know this is right up your alley. Talk to me about some of the keys to building brand loyalty, because this is something that, you know, everyone is trying to promote their individual brand, certainly from a taste perspective and a historical perspective, a location perspective. Are there any things that you can speak about? How do you really create brand loyalty?
Sure. So loyalty is emotional. When you create brand loyalty, don't confuse people coming back, repeat purchasers, because you're just convenient. To create true loyalty, there has to be a connection. So what I want you to think about is, what are the companies that you enjoy doing business with most? Amazon might be one of them. A winery might be one of them. Your car dealer, we've mentioned a few things, a favorite restaurant you go to. If, and it doesn't matter what the company is, B2B, B2C, makes no difference. What do you love about them? What do you truly say, this is why I love doing business with them? And then wonder, can I do that in my business too? And if I can, what would that look like? So now we're using other companies as a benchmark. to determine how to create that loyalty. But let's talk about the difference between loyal customers. There's satisfied customers, there's loyal customers, not to be confused. People that say, you know, they're satisfied are not always loyal. As a matter of fact, the study was done at Vanderbilt University, up to 40% of satisfied customers don't come back even though they're loyal or even though they're satisfied. They're not loyal. The difference between satisfactory and loyalty. In a business like a restaurant, that number can go as high as 80%, or a hotel. How was your stay? It was okay. Okay is satisfactory. Okay is not, wow, it was great. Can't wait to come back. Your people are so friendly. They're so nice. The food was wonderful. The rooms were really beautiful. So you're using positive adjectives to describe it. So I'll put it to you this way. If satisfactory is a rating on a scale of 1 to 5, where 5 is amazing and 1 is poor, satisfactory would be in the middle. You've got poor, fair, satisfactory, good and amazing or great, whatever. 3 is satisfactory. How much better than a 3 do you have to be to win loyalty and connect? Here's the coolest part, and it's not just me. I've been preaching this for years, but Horst Schultz, the first president and co-founder of the Ritz-Carlton hotel chain, said for us to become the world-class brand that we want to be, we need to be 10% better than average all the time. In other words, scale of 1 to 5, 3.3, but all the time. You cannot drop to be an average. You must always be a little bit above average. You want people to say, I love doing business with them. They're always so friendly when I call. They're always so knowledgeable when I have a question. They always get back to me quickly when I need them. Even when there's a problem, I know I can always count on them. So that word always followed by something positive, that's how you know you're starting to create some type of connection that's going to drive loyalty.
Got it. So along that thread, when we talk about exceptional customer service, can you tell me a little bit about the mechanics of providing exceptional customer service? Because I would imagine that that is interrelated directly to creating that emotional attachment that goes hand in glove with brand loyalty.
Right.
Is that a good statement?
Yeah, so it is. And basically what I told you was like the end result, but I did say 10% better than average all of the time, at least 10%. And you are operating it in an area where customers will say, that's amazing. But you need to make sure that your vision of what 10% better aligns with your customers. Oftentimes, companies say, oh, we've got great service. And then you talk to the customers and there's this big delta between what's reality and what the company thinks. So let's talk about it from a more strategic and even tactical way. Number one, we want to create a culture that's focused on the customer. Like 1 minute, there's a 6-step process that I could take you through and we can do a whole nother episode on this. But you simply, number one, define what your service vision is, your experience vision. For the Ritz-Carlton, it's we're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Number two, you communicate it. And I use the Ritz as an example. They preach it over and over again. Number three, you train everybody to it. And everybody at the Ritz gets trained to this service vision that they have. They actually call it their credo. And they're constantly training them. Number four, the leadership that defined it has to be the role model. They have to be the ones that say, this is how you do it. Number five, if somebody or some group or some department or some region is out of alignment, bring them back in. Mentor, coach, do what you need to make sure they're congruent with your service vision. And when it's working, you celebrate it. You make sure that you let people know how well they're doing and pat them on the back.
Well, that sounds like a recipe for a successful organization, regardless of whether you're a bank or a winery, right?
Yep. Jeff? Yep.
So as we look back in our conversation, I think we covered a lot of topics, but obviously they're kind of focused on number one, the convenience revolution and the 6 different disciplines that we've gone through there. Many of them are interrelated and touch upon one another. But basically the reducing friction, the self-service, the technology, the subscription, delivery, and access, and then how we wrap all of that into building brand loyalty is really creating that emotional attachment that individuals can have with our brands, which in many cases comes through with visits that they make directly to the property and how mm-hmm. we bring that forward in every touch point that a winery has. And then as we really look at customer service aspect of it, whether that be in person or even online. We haven't even touched about how to carry that forward in an online environment, but it really is going back to making sure that leadership has the vision, they share that vision, they train all of their employees, they are practicing it, and the repetition of it, making sure that it's just done, and it almost becomes second nature to everyone that's involved with that winery. Well, Shep, you have given a lot of these antidotes from great leaders from other industries, and you've really given us a perspective on how other industries look and view themselves. And that's exactly what we're attempting to do with the expert series at Copper Peak, is to bring forward experts from other industries to help our wine industry be able to benchmark with them. You know, the old analogy of Southwest Airlines looking at Formula One racers is, how do they turn planes quicker? Because a plane that is sitting on the ground is not revenue producing.
Right, so, right.
We're trying really to do the exact same thing with this. And we really appreciate you giving us your time and your wisdom and insights. Is there anything you'd like to leave our wine industry folks with as we wrap up here?
Sure. The one thing I want you to think of more than anything is to recognize interaction points, touch points, if you will. Jan Carlson, former president of Scandinavian Airlines, turned an entire airline around to become the most successful and admired airline in the entire industry, with the idea that anytime a passenger or a customer or a member, whatever you want to call them, comes into contact with any aspect of our business, forget about the airline business, let's talk about wineries. Anytime they come into contact with any aspect of what we do, they're going to form an impression. Recognize every one of those touch points, manage them well, and that is the start to creating a great customer experience.
Couldn't have said it any better, Shep. Appreciate your time, as always, Shep. That's a wrap.
All right. Thanks for having me.